The planes you're flying in today are likely developed 50 or 70 years ago. We have all these new technologies, and we can leverage all of those for both performance, but more importantly, for safety, redundancy. The most produced small aircraft in history is the Cessna 172 Skyhawk, and that plane has one of many things. And so by increasing redundancy at every system in the aircraft, we can absolutely achieve a higher level of safety.
Welcome to the Masters of Engineering podcast. Cool products, the people who develop them, and how they do it. I'm John Hirschtick, head of the Software as a Service business at PTC. I'm also the former co-founder and CEO of Onshape and of SolidWorks. I've spent my whole life building CAD and other software tools for product design, but the best part of my job is that I get to meet some of the coolest and smartest product developers in the world. And in my podcast, you get to meet them too. My guest today works on, believe it or not, I'd call them air taxis, flying vehicles that look like drones but are big enough to carry people. Insanely cool product that he's working on. He's also an expert in additive manufacturing and a fascinating engineer, Sean McCluskey. He's additive lead at Joby Aviation. Sean, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me.
And I'm looking forward to hearing about additive, hearing about Joby, and I understand you've been involved in a cool COVID fighting project.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to talk about all of them.
I almost don't know where to even start. There's so many cool aspects to what you're doing. What you're building looks to me like a giant drone that can carry people. But is that the right way to describe it? How would you describe what you're building?
I mean, there's a fascinating industry right now with urban mobility, and I think they're all types of craft that could help us solve these issues. As we grow and the human population expands, surface infrastructure is just becoming a nightmare, and it's really detracting from people's lives. From a pollution standpoint, from congestion, from just the time that we can't spend with our loved ones or doing the things that we get out of bed in the morning to do. So Joby is pursuing the mission of saving 1 billion people an hour a day by developing, producing, and operating our air taxi. We started with a very clear set of requirements for range, for capability in terms of payload, but most importantly in terms of safety. So we have a huge level of redundancy in every system, far beyond what would be required or what exists currently in small airplanes.
Yeah, I can imagine that safety is an almost unbelievable challenge because, you know, we've all seen drones and we can imagine them, I guess, scaling up to carry people or that kind of architecture. I guess it's not strictly a drone, but, you know, how do you assure that it's safe enough?
Well, it's a blend of the old and the new, really. I mean, there are tried and true, well-tested methods of developing safe aircraft. We've seen that for years with the unimaginably low injury and fatality rate in commercial aircraft. But now we have more tools at our disposal, right? The planes you're flying in today are likely developed 50 or 70 years ago. And so we have all these new technologies from motor technology, battery technology, materials technology, from composites and additive. And we can leverage all of those for both performance, of course, but more importantly, for safety, redundancy, more clarity on known timing, known load levels of failure. And by merging the old technology, which is systems and reliability safety that's been tried and true, like I said, from the FAA and from aerospace industry as a whole, and those new technologies that give us additional routes to achieve safety, we can achieve something that is significantly safer than any small aircraft that exists today.
So you think you're going to be safer than other small aircraft?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The most produced small aircraft in history is the Cessna 172 Skyhawk. And that plane has one engine, one set of flaps, one tail. There's one of many things. Whereas our aircraft, you know, has multiple engines, multiple flaps, multiple control surfaces, multiple sets of each of these multiple piloting methods. And so by increasing redundancy at every system in the aircraft, we can absolutely achieve a higher level of safety. And that's our, you know, we have our cultural values at Joby, and the first and the second are both safety.
And can you tell us anything about how far along you are, where in the process you are, when we might be able to go and ride in one?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad we weren't having this podcast 6 months ago. I couldn't say very much, but luckily we've been with the generous partnership and investment from Toyota Corporation, we've been able to publish a lot of information. So we are currently flight testing. We have large-scale, fully functional aircraft. You can see images of those online. Even if you go to our website, there are photographs of those.
Wait, you mean the images I see online, those are actually flying in tests now?
Yeah, those are photographs. Those are not, and there's an image of it flying on the website. Those are not renderings.
That is so cool. So this product is, you know, just an incredible vision. And can you tell me, your additive lead is a really interesting title. I know you're an expert in 3D printing. Can you tell us about what you're doing in support of getting the Joby vehicle?
Yeah, absolutely. So Joby has a unique level of clarity in terms of its long-term mission and the routes to get there. Our CEO and co-founder he's a phenomenal engineer, but he's also a huge optimist. And when you take the optimist part without the being a phenomenal engineer, you get all of the wonderful promises of many of these technologies, right? The promises of composites, the promises of additive. And when you take the great engineer without the optimism, you get what I call the innovative retreat, right? Which is, well, this definitely works. Let's just try and, you know, utilize these technologies to their maximums. But when you form a company that has both the optimism and the engineering prowess to handle technologies like additive and advanced composites, you get a very clear goal of having these technologies and capabilities in-house to be clear competitive advantages in the future. So if you look at the aircraft that's in those images, the ones you can find on the website, that aircraft is flying additive heat exchangers for the propulsion units. It's flying, the motors themselves are architected around printed titanium substructures. It's flying primary structural titanium components, aluminum components, is flying polymer components. That the plane in the main picture on the website has something on the order of 1,200 printed parts on it.
Wow. So you're like living the dream. I mean, this is what
it certainly feels that way. Yeah.
So, but it's one thing, you know, like this has been around as a concept, but to actually build a real passenger flight vehicle, you're saying structural elements are 3D printed additive manufactured out of titanium.
That's correct.
On there.
That's correct.
That's incredible. I mean, are you the first, again, based on public, you know, information, would you be about the first? It's the first time I've heard of that.
From what we know of publicly available information, the structural titanium components would be a first. Yes.
And so in the motors, so obviously you're making your own motors then, if you're making your own.
Yeah. So Joby Aero or Joby Aviation has a phenomenal history as really the sum of the learnings and expertise from many other Joby family companies. So before Joby Aero, there was Joby Energy and Joby Motors and Joby Metals and Joby Technologies and all of these companies that built up expertise in each of these different fields. And in around 2010, 2011, Joben said, oh, okay, now we have all the pieces we need. Let's bring them all together, explore concepts for the aircraft. They explored at that time many different configurations. You had planes that were tilt wing, tilt rotor. You know, you had fixed wing, fixed rotor with pivoting fuselages, all sorts of different configurations that were built at subscale and even some close to full scale. And so, yes, we make our own motors. We build our own battery packs. We do all of our own composites manufacturing, additive manufacturing. The vast majority of the airplane is built in-house using our own manufacturing capabilities.
A lot of people are so interested in additive for production. There must be a whole bunch of hurdles I can imagine, like, you know, picking the printing technology, developing it, the control software, reliability, simulation, validation. Are you looking at all these problems personally? Is that part of your job at Joby?
Yeah. So when I joined the Joby team in 2017, you know, we laid out our quote master plan, and there was a phase zero where we explored two questions. One, will additive work for what we needed to do? And question two was, is it something we should outsource? Do these vendors already exist? Or do we need to bring it in-house in order to develop the expertise and quality necessary to do this? And those two questions had very interesting answers. The first question, the answer was, there are hints of this being possible, but the vast majority of the industry is not there. So we received, out of everything we explored in that first phase, we received one part that was of the quality that we believed was necessary to put this through. And then the second question, there are all sorts of companies that exist that have additive capabilities for use by customers, you know, service bureau, contract manufacturers that have AS9100 certificates. They have aerospace quality levels in terms of quality systems, but the core part quality, the core technological maturity for the vast majority, it just isn't there. And the same problem that's been plaguing the additive industry for decades, right? The silos of information. Everyone is siloed. They believe everything they develop is their intellectual property. And you have one company who's very, very good at one small detail, and a different company it's great at a different detail, and the information is stagnant, and so the technology remains stagnant. And the other side of it is that you can never meet expectations when the expectations are inflated by the media and by the industry itself.
It's been a big problem.
It's a huge problem. And so that was the end. That was phase zero. So we said, yes, this is possible. It's going to be difficult, extremely, and we have to do it ourselves if we want to meet those quality standards.
So do you use commercial printers or do you?
Yes and no. We purchase commercially available printers. Many of our machines are serial number zero, serial number one of their type. But in all cases, we purchase them and modify them.
So you're like a speed shop for printers. You start with something stock and you rip it apart a little and So your machines might or might not, in some cases, it's okay, but you're definitely, you don't have anything that's just like an off the shelf unit that you bring in. You've got to do some work. And then what about if you're comfortable, what about the software to design, control the process? And again, I don't want to get too confidential, but just
totally
in
fine.
A general way, because my guess is a lot of people out there, a lot of people might listen to this or other product developers really wouldn't even know what that's like to modify a 3D printer. But is the rest of it, is a software stack something standard, or are you doing software too?
Yeah. As of right now, the parts that are currently flying, most of them were developed and printed with off-the-shelf software packages. The nice thing is that at these small volumes, we can individually inspect and fully test to the limit loads every single part.
So that's going to be my next question.
Yeah, so that helps a lot.
For
production, everything from the creation of the recipe file through shipping that final part to integration is an entirely Joby and our software partners developed software stack.
Wow.
So powder tracking, build tracking, logging, the full MES, even all the way down to driving the laser controllers and PLCs for the printers is all Joby software.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So then it is going to be your own software, but and you're testing each part. That is awesome. If you had any advice to give other product developers on thinking about using metal additive, what do you think are the most common? I mean, you kind of alluded to one, too high an expectation, which you talked about in the consumer world. There's this idea that, I can 3D print anything I want in a moment, but pros know that it's impossible.
Right.
For the pros, they've been led to believe, I can print a lot of metal parts. What kind of advice would you have to another professional on how they should think about approaching metal, 3D printing metal?
Yeah, I think if you combine those two characteristics I said earlier, the optimism and the engineering prowess, if you combine those with a third element of, it's a little abstract, but I like to call it engineering humility, essentially make as few assumptions as you can and get all of your information from testing. You know, the moment that you think you know something and you're like, I don't have to test it, that is the thing that will go wrong. And so combining those three things, really just go back to the engineering fundamentals, stay optimistic about it, and get as much data as possible, as many of your assumptions as possible from data. If you look at additive, it succeeds extremely well when placed into a situation that is appropriate and can take advantage of the technology itself. You know, if there's one pin on a space rocket that is hugely fatigue critical and is a cylinder, like, don't print it, right? Buy a manufactured, tested, certified pin that will do the job.
What do you think has been the biggest impact or impacts of using additive? Not that I can't imagine, I could imagine all sorts, but from you, now that you're using it, the biggest benefits to Joby and ultimately your customer because you're using additive?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's infectious when you get it right. You know, you have a team of, you know, 50 structural designers that are working on the airframe, for example. And one of them is working really, really hard and gets it right and produces a part that is 20% lighter, 50% higher performing, and meets all of the requirements, and actually looks like a production part that you could imagine seeing on an aircraft, right? And everyone else takes a step back and goes, whoa, now my part kind of sucks, you know? And then the next person goes, ooh, I have a part that could benefit from that. And then they do it. And then the next person does it. And the next person does it. And pretty soon, people are you know, discussing internally, like, why can't we use this for more things? Like, why are you holding us back? Like, give us more production capacity. Give us better, you know, give us more pathways that we can utilize for additive. And I would say that the benefit is, initially, when you go into this, you think the benefit is going to be cost or performance or something like that. But the truth is, it's an entirely different mindset change in the engineers when you get it right. That's the best benefit, because they're not only applying that mindset change to additive; they're applying it to other things. They're stopping. They're reducing the mindset of, oh, I have to make it this way because that's how this part is made, and they're starting to think of everything like, how can this be better? How can this be fundamentally better than what existed before? And in over half of the cases where our manufacturing engineers are working with the designers, we end up saying additive is not the right path, right? Because we want to be very honest about that. But almost always we find a better path than what they had before. And that's the benefit of having additive.
That's interesting. There's a whole mindset change because you're optimizing, coming up with better designs. And you mentioned higher performance, lighter weight, and the look. So the parts have to look right too,
you're saying. Yeah. And the truth is that I'm very optimistic about them, but it's not the best way to do everything. And topology optimization is wonderful unless you have world-class engineers, and then it becomes less valuable, right? Lattice development is amazing, but there are all sorts of issues with it that people don't talk about, right? Your stress concentration percentage goes up dramatically, your crack initiation point, your fatigue and damage tolerance goes down substantially, right? And when I say look right, the good engineers, the really good engineers, have a gut instinct when something is right and when something is wrong, and they're almost always correct, right? And so when you have some bracket that looks all crazy, and you know, it's interesting. But when you actually get it right, it can look crazy, but there's a small shift when it's like, oh, the load paths are right. The load transfer is right. The bearing strength looks right on your connection points. Like, ah, that is a real part. And that's so critical to get right.
Can I shift for a minute? I understand you've been involved in a COVID testing project. Can you tell me more about that project?
Sure. Yeah. Again, like I said at the beginning, Joby's concept of safety, right? First and second company mission. And Jobin really is at the focus of that. And he had been involved in the medical space before with Velocity 11, which is a medical robotics company. And many, many of the people from Velocity 11 moved out to populate the sort of unicorn companies that we know now, right? A bunch of those engineers became engineering leads at Tesla, engineering leads at Mission Motors, engineering leads at Carbon, engineering leads at Joby, all of these sort of big Silicon Valley unicorn manufacturing and engineering companies. And when COVID hit, a bunch of those people came together and started creating a plan for high volume, high throughput, qualified test and trace methods.
Have you learned anything by watching how that project and that company proceeded? Is there something you say, wow?
I saw a couple things that are pretty interesting. The first is that even people who are very happy and satisfied with their careers, there are some people who still crave impossible circumstances, right? People who you know, they're totally happy in their day job. They love what they're doing. But in the back of their mind, they're thinking, oh, I really would jump ship if there was something that was critically difficult, impossible. And so there was, you know, some people who within 5 minutes of a phone call were at our new location, you know, setting up these robots, verifying stuff, you know, rewriting firmware, trying to get these high-speed robots running and cycling. The second thing I noticed was people's immediate frustration with CAD tools when the CAD tools were slower than they were, right? Mm. You know, when you're in an aerospace organization, the whole system is kind of slow, right? You're dealing with regulatory requirements, you're dealing with strict drawing requirements, and everything's a little slow, right? But when you have 24 hours to build a robot that can do, you know, 20,000 specimens or something like that, like the CAD is just slow. And you start to get annoyed with the time it takes for your phone to switch screens, the time it takes for you to boot your CAD program, the time it takes for a file to move from one computer to another. And within the first week of working on this project, had been totally frustrated with conventional applications and moved entirely to collaborative web-based CAD immediately. It was just like there was a no-brainer. We just couldn't take, if we could design a part faster than an application-based, local machine-based CAD could even boot, then what are we doing wasting our time? So that was a big one. And then the other one was just how quickly we are in normal life to accept artificial limitations. We just, oh, well, I guess I can't get that part till Thursday, right? Or like, well, I guess it just, that's how the firmware is written, you know? And even people at the critical cutting edge of technology are just so willing to accept small arbitrary limitations. And suddenly when it becomes this quite literal life or death situation in some cases, it's amazing that very, very few of those limitations are real. They're all artificial. If you actually need something tomorrow, you can get it. The difference in the people who do and the people who don't is really who's willing to go those extra 10 steps.
Wow, that is so, so well said. And I so agree with you. People are working faster. I call it like hyper agile, hyper speed. So you saw that. So it sounds like you really did observe the process and the tools.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, those are the two things, the cadence and the breaking through the natural barriers. Yeah, it's a big awakening. It's kind of like everyone's a startup now, you know, or something. But it's really interesting. Do you think that post-COVID, do you think some of these lessons are going to last in the product development community as a whole?
I hope so, but I don't think so.
Oh, really?
I mean, if we know it's possible, why ever go back, right? Yeah. If we know that this level of speed and development and criticality is possible, why settle back into the acceptance of all of these artificial limitations, right? And it's fine to say that now when we're in the midst of it, right? And it's so clear and it's so crisp, but you know, time obscures everything. And so I hope it sticks.
Thank you, Sean, for joining us today. It's been amazing to hear a little bit more about not only what the extremely cool Joby aircraft is, but also the amazing way you've used additive and how to think about additive as a catalyst for mindset change across engineering. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And so thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And to our listeners, I hope you enjoyed hearing from Sean. You can learn more about Joby Aviation at jobyaviation.com. That's JOBYAVIATION.com. Thank you all for tuning in. You can listen or subscribe to Masters of Engineering at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you like to find your podcasts. I love hearing what you think, so make sure you leave a review of this episode and tell me what you thought of Sean and his story. And be sure to follow me on Twitter at Jay Hirschtick. That's it for today. See you next time on Masters of Engineering.